This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly, March 9, 2024. Sox fans single game tickets are on sale now. Be here for opening day on March 28th at 3:10 p.m. Don't miss out on the season's biggest matchups, plus exciting new promotions and theme nights all summer long. For more information and to secure your tickets, visit WhiteSox.com today. We've got a ball game this afternoon. Here on the station, we've got the White Sox and Michael Soroka's second start of spring. Looking forward to that. We saw him throw his first just the other day. Matt Waldron of the Padres gets the start there. Lennon DJ coming up right at 2 o'clock. Get you the lineup in just a little bit as well. Yes, we are in the starting pitching and lineup era of White Sox Weeklies. Truly excited about that whole thing. We've got opening day right around the corner, coming closer and closer and quicker and quicker. I want to go back through the week that was in spring training. We've definitely got some headlines and some news making going on with the White Sox. The first round of cuts from camp has been completed. Michael Huff, former outfielder, director of youth development for the White Sox, and Big Ten baseball analyst, is going to join us a little bit later on in the show, 1:45. We'll talk to Mike about how the roster cuts have kind of shaped things to this point and how they affect the depth chart. I'm sure you've seen the names already. We'll get to them in just a minute. I want to talk about the individual cuts themselves and kind of where it leaves the White Sox, or I guess the better way to put it is kind of what remains of the White Sox as we get closer and closer to making the final 26 that'll go north to Chicago to face the Tigers on March 28th. But the names you've probably seen at this point, 12 roster moves got made on Friday. It was pretty early in the morning on Friday, if memory serves. I think I saw this definitely before lunch. Anyway, Oscar Colas, Davis Martin, left-hander Sammy Peralta, and infielder Jose Rodriguez were optioned to AAA Charlotte. Two more players optioned to AA Birmingham. That's Yosimar Cosin and lefty Jake Eater. Eater, the starter that the White Sox got in return for Jake Berger in their trade with the Marlins last year. And then six assigned to minor league camp. This means that their particular assignments, whether it's AA or AAA or high A, whatever, they'll be decided a little bit later on. Reassigned to minor league camp, that's lefty Kai Bush, who was a return in the Angels trades. Frazier Ellard, Adam Hackenberg, the catcher, right-hander Edgar Navarro, who's a little hurt, Edgar Caro, and Lane Ramsey, who we saw a little bit at the end of last season. And Edgar Caro, the third or fourth prospect in the White Sox organization, depending on where you look. He was the big headliner in the trade that sent Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez to the Angels. Of course, you remember that. White Sox have 58 players remaining in camp, 30 pitchers, 5 catchers, 12 infielders, and 11 outfielders. And like I said, I want to get into the roster cuts specifically when we talk to Michael Huff a little bit later on in the show. But if you've got questions about it or wanted to point some things out, 312-332-3776, that's the phone number. We're here for all things White Sox, all things baseball for you this afternoon as we get closer and closer to a ball game today. But I, you know, listen, it is very clear and a very different thing for the White Sox this spring training as opposed to or juxtaposed against last year's spring training. Oscar Colas is among the very first cuts in the 2024 spring training with Chris Getz at the top of the baseball decision-making tree. Last year, at this time, Oscar Colas was getting as many at-bats as the White Sox could get him in spring as they wanted to, you know, run him out there, get him through his paces, see what they had, and hopefully make him a starting right fielder in Major League Baseball. That did not pan out. Tough year last year for Oscar, both offensively and defensively. In a couple of different stints with the Bigs and AAA, Chris Getz made it known, I think it was at the spring training GM meetings just before we got camp started, or just as camp was starting, before game started, but after pitchers and catchers had reported, said that Oscar was going to head down to AAA and was going to be a season where he needed to work himself back up to the big league roster. You know, I don't mean to you know, really kind of opine or even focus so much on this. We kind of knew this was coming. This had been set up by the White Sox front office, but it's a big change. You know, that's a guy who the White Sox last year were counting on to make starts in right field, and now that position particularly has guys like Dominic Fletcher and Zach Deloche out there competing for spots, to say nothing of the fact that the other veterans that they brought in, Kevin Pillar and Brett Phillips and so on and so forth, but you know, right field looks a lot different, both in approach and in terms of the nameplates on the back of the White Sox jerseys at this point in spring than it did last year, and I feel like it's very much worth mentioning. We'll go through some of the rest of the guys and the springs they had in just a little bit. Again, Mike Huff coming up at 1:45 this afternoon. I wanted to go through some of the starts because, again, as we begin spring training here, and you know, I guess we're well underway at this point, Sox win-loss record isn't all that great at this point. They are 4-11 as they go on to take on the Padres this afternoon, but you know, wins and losses in spring mean almost nothing. Really, results, individual results, mean almost nothing, too. You'd like to see more runs on the board. The Sox have a minus 36 run differential. You'd like to see fewer walks and more strikeouts, but by and large, what matters most is keeping guys healthy and keeping your roster options, you know, as close to 100% as you can. On that point, a couple of injuries we'll walk through here in the first part of the show, and a couple of, I guess you could call them results, but I'd like to think of them more as like early looks at some of the starters in camp. I mentioned this a few weeks ago. I'm interested in velocity from starters and relievers alike. I like to see strikeouts, and I don't like to see walks, and that's true on the hitting side of things as well. I don't like to see strikeouts, and I do like to see walks. But as for individual results, they're really tough to determine whether or not this means that it's going to carry on into spring or whether a cold spring is going to turn into something completely different once the regular season starts. We've all done this long enough. It's really difficult to pull one into the other and claim that there's any momentum, but it's hard to ignore, you know, the outliers one way or the other. Let's start with the starters that we've seen here over the last week or so. Let's start with Dylan Cease. He faced the Brewers on Thursday. It was his second start of spring through three innings. Gave up one home run. I loved this. I mean, you hate to see Dylan give up a homer, but it's going to happen every once in a while. Remember, Cease faced the Brewers, and the home run was hit by a minor leaguer named Brewer Hicklin. The Brewers have a guy named Brewer on their team. They got to get Seth Beer over to the roster as well. Then they'll have a Brewer and a Beer, and hopefully at some point they make the majors together. I think Seth Beer's still kicking around somewhere as a Diamondbacks pick. Got a Clemson a few beers back, but I would love to see that in Milwaukee. That's neither here nor there. You saw 5 strikeouts from Dylan Cease in that start. First inning, 19 pitches, 13 strikes. And you saw 96 and 97 from Dylan Cease to go along with some good breaking stuff, too. It was reported in a couple of different spots, and White Sox assistant general manager Josh Barfield talked about it some, about the cool down in the conversation between other teams and Dylan Cease. This was a conversation that Barfield had with Darryl Van Scowen of the Chicago Sun-Times, and Barfield said that, you know, other teams have been in contact, his words, about Dylan Cease. There's nothing imminent. Again, his words on the trade front, and that we're preparing to have him be the opening day starter. So, you know, again, I think this will be a storyline up to the trade deadline in the middle of this summer. I think things will kick up pretty seriously about a month into the regular season. And that's mostly because of who Dylan Cease is and the pitching injuries that we're seeing to a lot of different clubs. The Boston Red Sox specifically, and some of them contenders as well. The Padres themselves are having some deals or having some issues with injuries in their rotation. Lord knows the Giants are having some issues. They signed Matt Chapman, the third baseman, to a fairly interesting contract, non-traditional contract, earlier this week, which means, I guess, that they'd like to push for it a little bit. But they've got some issues with the starting rotation that may or may not work themselves out by opening day. So you never know. One way or another, what we said about Dylan Cease and his value to another team is still very much the case. There's 2 years of control left on Dylan Cease's major league service time. He's not going to cost all that much over this year and next year relative to what you figure his performance is going to be. And whether that means that a team may suffer a couple more injuries or a couple more question marks in their rotation this spring. That means a contender is going to spring for something before spring training ends, or whether that means you have, you know, a continuous communication between some contenders and yourself, and you see if something materializes closer to the deadline. I don't know, but we're in that area where things can be kind of gray right now, and at least for my part, I'm just kind of taking each and every Dylan Cease start and being happy about it. I'm really looking forward to watching him pitch for the White Sox. I hope that we find some way that the White Sox can both contend and have Dylan Cease on the roster over the next 2 years. It's just difficult to see that needle getting threaded, though, you know, you root for it, or at least I do. Eric Fetty threw on Friday, 3 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, no strikeouts, but we did see a lot of ground balls from Fetty. Remember, Fetty is the guy that the White Sox brought over from the KBO last year, signed the 2-year deal, had the Mets, among others, bidding against the White Sox, and the White Sox won that sweepstakes, I guess, for Eric Fetty. He was very, very good in the KBO, a former first-round draft pick of the Nationals, who really struggled in about 5 seasons with Washington. But even through those struggles, with an underwhelming fastball, he was able, with sinkers mostly, to get a lot of ground balls when he pitched. And we saw that in the start Friday, I thought. Some good ground balls, a couple of double plays that got him out of some trouble. And again, while I don't look at spring training results and say, okay, this is great, this is bad, or, you know, whatever, you do kind of look at the shape of the pitcher and just kind of, is he accomplishing what he looks to have accomplished last season, I suppose? Kind of take general, you know, broad strokes at things. You could see that with Eric Fetty. You know, you could see that. I still am really interested to watch how his repertoire is going to feature against big league hitters once we get to big league action, whether that sweeper that he's added that's been talked about quite a bit by Brian Bannister, the director of pitching for the White Sox, a new addition to the front office, is going to get the chases, or whether that's going to be more of a setup teaser kind of pitch that may get him to more ground balls, more weak contact. That's interesting to me. It really is. I mean, then today, we'll get to see start number 2 from Michael Soroka. He made his debut Monday, start number 2 today. He did get 2 innings work against the Diamondbacks, gave up a dinger, struck out 2, and walked 1. And even as spring training goes, the first start is the first start, right? That's just a guy putting air in the tires and getting the car out and around and seeing what happens. Second start is where, you know, you kind of start to dial some things in or work on something specifically. You like to see 3 innings or so. Soroka, at least from my perspective, and I think for a lot of others, is kind of a linchpin in the rotation as it sits right now, though we've got a lot of conversations to have about the White Sox rotation with some of the comments that Pedro Grifol made, specifically as it pertains to Michael Kopech. But Soroka's been at the top of the pile before. 2019 with the Braves, he was absolutely terrific. A pair of Achilles tears has really set him back over the last few seasons. But I got a chance to meet Soroka just for a little bit when I was down at spring training toward the beginning of things. Seemed like a nice guy. Seemed absolutely focused on getting himself back to that level. And if Soroka's pitching anywhere close to where he did in 2019, as you'd figure, this White Sox rotation looks quite a bit different. It's about keeping him healthy. We're going to hit a break here in a moment. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about two guys that may have been ticketed for the White Sox rotation and now have a bit of a shoulder shrug around that possibility. Would Michael Kopech, would Touki Toussaint not make the rotation? What would the rest of the starting five look like if that's the case? How likely is that? We'll try and ask and answer. Well, we'll definitely ask, and we'll try and answer those questions when we come back. I'm Connor McKnight. You've got White Sox Weekly right here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
You got White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Padres coming up at 2:05 this afternoon. Len Casper and Darren Jackson take over these airwaves at 2. It's Michael Soroka starting for the White Sox and Matt Waldron for the Padres. Waldron is, I love this. This is a fun, I don't know if this qualifies as a fun fact or if it's more than a fun fact. Jack, give me a Jack McGrath, our producer today. Give me a ruling on this, whether it's fun fact or actual fact. Matt Waldron of the Padres is one of just like three guys in all of baseball, minor league and big league, that's still throwing a knuckleball. And I feel like, especially being White Sox Weekly, American League focused, the Padres being a National League team, we have to bring this up because one cannot let knowledge of or the practice of a knuckleball die in baseball. I would be beside myself if the knuckleball went extinct. I don't know about you.
That's a fun fact. The knuckleball's fun. Okay. I love the knuckleball.
Absolutely love the knuckleball. The passing of Tim Wakefield was devastating to, I mean, everyone, and then especially baseball fans of my generation, you know, kind of that 40 to 29, 30-year-old Red Sox World Championship, all that kind of stuff. Pardon. And Wakefield was the dude. I mean, he was the guy throwing that knuckleball. You had the R.A. Dickey thing happen a little bit for the younger generation. Won an NL Cy Young, throwing a knuckler like 81, 82. Waldron, though, doesn't just throw the knuckleball. Most knuckleballers, at least in my generation and the one past, a little bit different from the Negroes and whatnot, but like Phil Negro, I mean, he was working with a lot of different stuff, but also threw a lot. And it's different arsenal. Anyway, you with Waldron, he sneaks a knuckler and then kind of works fastball slider as well. So it's not like that true knuckleball approach. Wake, I think, check me if I'm wrong here, Jack, if you remember, Wake would hum a fastball in every now and again, and I think he had like a junk curveball or something, but it was really just to keep people off balance. The pitch mix for him was like 85% knuckler or something like that. And Dickey would throw knuckle and fastball. I don't know that he had a breaking pitch on top of it, but it was just those two. I missed the knuckleball. I'm looking forward to Matt Waldron. Hopefully the White Sox tee off on a couple. If it's high, let it fly. If it's low, let it go. That's the advice, right? If the knuckle's up, you swing. And if it's low, it's going to drop lower and probably a ball. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single-game ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. I can't promise whether or not there will or will not be knuckleball information in this in the White Sox Insider pack, but I'm happy to offer it. You can visit whitesox.com/insider today. Anyway, Waldron, Soroka, White Sox and Padres coming up in just a little bit. There was some conversation between the White Sox beat, the esteemed and intrepid White Sox beat reporters, and Pedro Grifol about Michael Kopech after Wednesday's game against the Dodgers. Not sure if you caught any of that or maybe just caught the highlights or whatnot. I'll catch you up a little. Again, I'm not huge on results, but they happen and you talk about them and managers deal with it and whatnot. Not super stuff from either pitcher. They weren't the only two to work. But Kopech went 2 2/3, walked 3, struck out 3, 2 earned. And as we kind of saw in start number 1 for Kopech, he was effectively wild early, I guess, sort of, and then kind of dialed it in later, but not totally. Toussaint got shelled, 7 earned in 1 1/3 innings, 5 hits, 3 walks, no strikeouts for Tuki Toussaint. And as is, it was kind of going to be hard for Tuki Toussaint to make the rotation. I mean, I guess really hard for Tuki Toussaint to make the rotation. And you figured probably big league long man, triple-A rotation seems more likely now. Although we've got a lot of time left in spring training to see how the rest of the bullpen and, fingers crossed and knock on wood, injuries might sort themselves out with the White Sox too. But let me get to you, what Pedro Grifol kind of said about about Michael Kopech and kind of about his work in that game. Largely, it was, I don't know, non-committal, I think is maybe the best way to say it. Grifol kind of said, Kopech is getting built up to be one of our starters. I know we want to talk about it, but I think in about another week, we'll actually talk about it. Talk about him in the rotation versus bullpen or whatever. Right now, everybody's just competing. Now, Dylan Cease and Michael Kopech had the most starts for the White Sox last year. Kopech was moved into the bullpen late in the season when struggles really got out of hand. You're a White Sox fan and listening to the show, I don't have to remind you how good Michael Kopech was out of the bullpen in 2022. 2 with a couple of starts here and there. But remember, we were still playing 7-inning doubleheaders at that point, which is a great idea. I don't know why I went away from those. Which means you can do a lot of different things and expect a much shorter start from your starter before turning things over to the bullpen. I think there's a big league starter in Michael Kopech still. I really do. I think that's become more difficult to find over the last calendar year, but I think that stuff is still there. It's kind of that command. It's definitely command of fastball that is the giant issue for Michael Kopech. And now with Pedro Grifol talking, I guess not openly about Kopech not making the rotation, but definitely not saying he's in our starting five, it has tended to turn the conversation some. You would figure, at least the way it sits right now, that it's Cease and Fetty and Soroka and Flexen and Kopech in that White Sox starting five. Now, I'm putting Chris Flexen in there only because the general manager, Chris Getz, said the expectation is for Chris Flexen to be in the rotation. Granted, comes with a grain of salt. That was before spring training started. That was before the big push for Garrett Crochet to take starts into spring training really kind of popped up. And it was, you know, just, it was long ago enough that I'm willing to not have it inked in and just kind of penciled in. And that's why I'd kind of thrown out Touki Toussaint as somebody who could make the starting rotation, make the starting five out of spring. But those are, I mean, those are the guys right now. If Kopech weren't to make the starting rotation, I wonder what the options look like. And we'll talk to Michael Huff about this a little bit at 145 as well. I'm open to, and I like the idea, of doing something unconventional with the roster this season if the White Sox decide that that's the best for player development. Here's the example. And I'm just, you know, this is me spitballing a little bit, just you and me talking. What if you had a situation where Kopech and Crochet could piggyback a little bit at the start of the season? Is it the best solution to either one of their development issues? I don't know. Probably not. But given the fact that it seems like both of them might need a bit of a compromise in order to face big league hitters early on this year, maybe this could work. Now, it doesn't come without consequence. You are committing in a piggyback situation, whether it's Kopech taking the ball at the start of a game and Crochet coming in for multiple innings afterward, or you flip that order and reverse it, or maybe you have Crochet open and go as long as he can, and the other guy closes out the game with the rest of the bullpen, or however much you need to fill out the middle of the innings. Who's to say? But it's not like this hasn't existed before for short stints by other teams, one guy being a piggyback for another. It does cost you a bullpen spot, right? You're committing on that given day, that fifth day, for two guys, in this case, Kopech and Crochet, to throw in that game, which means those two guys aren't available to throw in any other game in that span of 5 days, or really any game. I mean, that's where they've got to throw. If you're going to do a piggyback situation, we've seen teams like the Rays do this successfully. They call it an opener, or they use an opener, and then the bullpen, the way they've got to kind of roll that bullpen around with AAA call-ups works the same way as this might. You just, as a team, you have to be willing to roll through guys and keep a fresh bullpen if you're going to commit to two starters being working in a tandem role like that. I don't think this is where the White Sox are headed. I'm throwing it out there as an option to see how you might feel about it, to just kind of be able to talk about something that's different than a five-man rotation or a six-man rotation. I don't think Pedro Grifol, in saying that we're just talking about competing right now in regards to Michael Kopech, is laying the groundwork for something completely different here. But with the last year, 2 years, that has happened for Michael Kopech at the big league level, you do have to start to wonder whether, because of conversations that the White Sox are having around Garrett Crochet being a starter, whether something different is in the offing here. I tend to think no, but I think It'd be short-sighted to not discuss it at least a little bit. So that was a goal today. When we come back, we'll talk about a minor league deal the White Sox made with an old foe added to the mix. A couple of injury updates as well. Mostly good news from some of the injured. And the spring breakout game is new this year to Cactus League play. The White Sox will play the Cubs in the spring breakout game. And if you're wondering, what is the spring breakout game? Well, we've got that for you coming up as well. I'm Connor McKnight. It's White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho.
White Sox games are better together. Reconnect with your group at Guaranteed Rate Field this season. No matter the occasion, we have a variety of areas that are sure to meet your needs. For more information, visit whitesox.com/groups or call 312-674-1000. If you are at the ballpark and find your way around, I don't know, if you run into me, ask me where to find the best burger in the concourse, because I can absolutely tell you it's the Comiskey Burger. They take all the stuff from a Chicago dog, you know, the pickle and the tomato and the sport peppers and the onions and the relish and everything like that. They chop all that up and then make it into kind of it's a relish, a goulash kind of thing, right? So they chop all that stuff up. Then they slap a big old thing of Merck's cheese spread on top of the burger and then the relish from the Chicago hot dog, and that's all on the burger. It's the Comiskey Burger, and I promise you it'll change your life. You're going to go into that, you're going to order, and you say, oh, Connor, it's a burger. How's this going to change my life? And then you walk out, you're going to finish the thing, and you go, I'm a different person now. I don't know who that old person was, but I'm not that person anymore. I am a changed human because I ate the Comiskey Burger at Guaranteed Rate Field. My opinion, but it's true. A couple of news and notes issues for the White Sox here. They signed a pitcher to a minor league deal yesterday, Brad Keller. Now, if you're thinking, hey, is that the same Brad Keller that Tim Anderson took deep and bat flipped to the moon, and then Keller got upset at Tim having fun while playing baseball and then he hit him? Yes, you're right. That is the same Brad Keller. So Keller signed to a minor league deal. Tim Anderson obviously took his talents to South Beach. He's playing for the Marlins this season. Keller's 28 years old. He was a free agent after the 2023 season last year. Tough season. He pitched only 45 and a third innings due to a shoulder injury. Thoracic outlet syndrome was the diagnosis, which can be very tricky for pitchers to return from. I don't pretend to be a doctor. I've talked a lot to people who know a lot about shoulder injuries. That's about as close as I get. I worked with Barry Rosner for a little while, who has had his shoulder rebuilt 15 or 19 different times, something like that. So that's really all I know about shoulders. But I know thoracic outlet syndrome can be difficult to come back from. And I also know that one TOS issue, thoracic outlet syndrome issue, is not the same as the other. It's not all one thing. And it sounds like Keller did not or may not have had surgery on this. I've not seen the official notes on this. I don't know if the beat has gotten to Keller quite yet. But according to Major League Trade, MLBTradeRumors.com, it's unclear whether Keller did or did not have surgery for the issue. If he got away with things not having to face surgery, then that might be a much less serious thoracic outlet syndrome issue. And maybe he's able to pop back to it. You'll remember Keller. I mean, he, for 6 years with the Royals, a 350 ERA, reliever into a starter that the Royals took from the Diamondbacks in the Rule 5 draft. And Keller was, might have been a big guy. You know, it looked like for a little bit, Keller was going to be a number one in that Royals rotation. I mean, if not a 1-1, then, you know, one of the top guys in their rotation at the time. And then injuries have set him back a little bit. So some performance issues, too. So we shall see when Brad Keller makes his Cactus League debut. It's a minor league deal again, and that's the extent of it. Some other injuries floating around camp. Picking up some of the latest here. Corey Knebel still working back from the shoulder surgery that kept him out all of last year. He's throwing bullpens, but nothing live. Taking his time. No setbacks since the one he did have a few weeks ago. That was late February. very much unclear, as I understand it, when and how Corey Knebel is going to work back into facing live hitters, and his status for opening day very much up in the air. Things looking a little bit better for John Brebbia, it sounds like. Got this from Daryl Van Scowen also, although I think some others were on this too. John Brebbia has ditched the walking boot. Brebbia had a calf injury throwing what I think was his last live BP before games started. It was a weird calf injury too, because Brebbia talked to reporters after it happened and kind of said, I could still pitch. It doesn't bother me when I'm pitching. It bothers me when I'm doing everything else. So, like, you know, getting off the mound and fielding a grounder or anything like that would be potentially perilous to Brebbia's calf. And as it stands right now, he's kind of the most veteran arm in that bullpen, one of them. And a candidate, I would think, to take some high leverage stuff if he's healthy. But obviously they're not going to push him if he's not. He threw a side on Thursday, going to see how things go and get a plan together afterward. I'd love to see. I really enjoyed my time with John Brebbia when I met him in spring training. I think he'll be a big add from both a clubhouse standpoint and a veteran standpoint in that bullpen. He's pitched well at times. Bit of a, you know, he's been around the game for a little while, and the beard is evidence of that. So hopefully John Brebbia is able to get himself back and healthy and going. This is cool too. Major League Baseball in the Cactus League, and I guess in the Grapefruit League as well, is doing a spring breakout event in the middle of March. The White Sox play their spring breakout competition March 15th against the Cubs. Now, the issue here, or what spring breakout is each team taking some of their top prospects, just the prospects, and playing them in a game against another team's top prospects. All those games are being held between March 14th and 17th, both in Florida and Arizona. I've got the full rosters for the White Sox, but the notable prospects among their roster are Brian Ramos, Jacob Gonzalez, last year's number one pick, George Wolkow, the local kid who went in early rounds last year, Jordan Leisure, who I think is probably going to make the roster this year. If he doesn't, you're going to see him early. He was the big reliever added from the Dodgers last season. So this is, you know, you get to see all the top prospects compete against one of their. Oh, Edgar Caro, the catcher, is going to play in this game as well. So again, that's the 15th against the Cubs, and it's part of the spring breakout series, which I really like. You've heard me probably talk about the Arizona Fall League and how much I adore a chance to go out to the Arizona Fall League and watch top prospects play. This will feel kind of like that, but with the spring training, everything going on around it as well. On the other side of a break, we're going to talk to White Sox Director of Youth Development, Michael Huff. We'll get his take on the roster cuts that the White Sox made yesterday and take a look at the depth chart a little bit as well. I'm Connor McKnight. More White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight, and you can stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow the White Sox on social. Today they are at White Sox, everywhere you can find your social media, and you can find your social media just about everywhere these days. You can find Michael Huff out on the backfields and teaching your kids how to play baseball. Michael is the director of youth baseball for the White Sox, all-around good guy. And an analyst here on White Sox Weekly. Michael, pleasure to have you on as always. How are you, my friend?
I am good. And just like you said, out in Park Ridge this afternoon, doing some things with some kids. And glorious. Wouldn't mind having it about 10 or 15 degrees warmer, but just a beautiful day. Thank you.
That's what we say at this point of the season, right? We get something like 42, 45, and then you walk around, see another baseball fan. I'd take it. For opening day, I'd take it. This would be fine.
I'll take it. Exactly. Yep. As long as it's not sideways rain in the 30s, it's good enough for me.
We'll get to the camps in a little bit. They're opening up on the website now. You can register your child to go play, whether it's softball or baseball. The White Sox summer camps are amazing, and our friends at Wintrust help bring them to you, and so does our guest, Michael Huff. But, Mike, you know, I was looking at the roster cuts that the White Sox made earlier on in the show, just kind of briefly went over some of the names. But I thought the one thing that stood out to me when I saw these names was that Oscar Colas, who had been brought up as a guy that was going to go to AAA early on in this winter by general manager Chris Getz, has been sent to AAA. And that's a big change from where the organization was about that player last year and where we are now. I wonder what it speaks to you and how you think the development for Oscar needs to go here to get him back to being a contributor to this White Sox roster.
Well, I think you said it perfectly, Connor, the development. I think everyone was hoping last year could be a development year, coming back from across the pond over in Asia and really learning the game here, the speed of the game here, and that wasn't the case. We had such a need in right field that the classic example of someone getting rushed a little bit too early. So now when you say, here's our plan, you've talked to him, you've talked to his agent, you've explained the reason why. I'm sure for Oscar, you want to hang with, you know, the major league coaches as long as possible. But when you're told this in the off season and you know it's coming, there's always going to be some disappointment when it really happens. But now he can truly focus on doing the things that the White Sox coaches and front office said to him over the winter to be a part of this ball club going forward and never have to think about the minor leagues again.
I was looking at another name on the list. I got to talk to Davis Martin a little bit 2 years ago when he came up, made his big league debut, jumped from double A to triple A to the bigs, and really pitched well, save for a final outing this season that really kind of screwed up his numbers. I believe it was the last game of the year in 2022.
Mm-hmm. It was. Yep.
And he was, you know, he was dealing with an elbow a little bit then, it sounded like, and he did go through Tommy John, rehabbing from it now. I feel like we, the White Sox consumer, don't really talk about Davis Martin a whole lot. And they'll take their time, I think, getting Martin back to a full go. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if things are healthy and clicking for Martin that he doesn't make some impressive, whether they're starts or whether they're longer bullpen works in the major leagues this year. I was really impressed with the way Davis Martin works his stuff around the strike zone.
Yeah, and I have to be honest, a little bit surprised when he did come up, the success that he had. And it just harkened back to days where here was a pitcher, not just a thrower, and someone that wasn't overly talked about because he didn't just come off the radar gun and just be a first-round pick and everyone talking about. Here was a guy that worked on being a pitcher, not just a thrower, and had success at the major league level. So the injury is got to be so frustrating for a guy like that. But also, when you get in this situation and you're, again, going to be sent down partly because of an injury, partly because of just wanting to continue the development, I'm sure of the conversations he's had with Ethan Katz, with, you know, the entire coaching staff, has been around, here are the things we want you to keep working on. And don't worry about the ERA so much as if you're doing these things, we're going to need 10 starters over the course of the year. We may need 12 starters over the course of the year. So at some point, you have to be confident your number will get called. Just continue to work on those things, and you will be that person called. Now, the frustrating thing for everyone that gets sent down is you don't know who's going to be the next kid that comes up, either position player or pitcher, that surprises everybody over the course of the year. And like with him, gets that call up ahead of you and has the success he has and then maybe doesn't get injured. So you never want to leave it to somebody else or fate. But again, because of the injury, I think there were enough conversations that he understands what his goal is in the minor leagues with a plan that get healthy, show us you can do these things, and then we can truly think, and you can truly think, about getting called up at some point and never having to think about going back down to the minors.
Talking with Michael Huff here on White Sox Weekly about the roster cuts the White Sox made yesterday, dropping the overall number of players in camp to 58. Long way to go to get to 26, but that's for Pedro and Chris Getz to deal with. Mostly pitchers on this list, Michael, but one of the hitters is Edgar Caro, the catcher the White Sox got back from the Angels in the Lucas Giolito, Ronaldo Lopez deal. Two things I want to ask you about Caro here. One, what have you heard? How do you feel about where Caro's at? We see him on White Sox prospect list somewhere between 3 and 4, depending on where you look in the organization. And two, what does it mean to be a guy like Caro, who last season was pushed by the Angels to play at double A at age 20? I mean, it was an aggressive assignment for him. We saw the numbers offensively, you know, flag a little bit, but it was almost like they expected that and wanted that. Why does a team do that, especially You know, what do you see from a prospect when you say, okay, he's ready to get pushed?
I think one of two things. He's had so much success. You know, very, 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 very few people get to the major leagues and have success. Ken Griffey Jr. It's a small handful. So if you've never had any failure in your progression, then you get to the major leagues and there's failure. As an organization, you never really know how that person is going to react. Is he going to be able to bounce from it? Is he going to be able to learn from it? Or is he going to be so stuck in his, I've never failed before, I don't need to change, I am better than what you think I am, that sometimes an organization, when they see talent or they see 3 out of 5, 4 out of 5 of those real skills that you need to succeed at the major league level in play, even for a youngster, but there's one or two that aren't, sometimes your organization says, we have to put this kid in a position of some failure, not huge, but limited, so that he understands this is not going to be a nice, smooth, linear progression until I'm 35 years old. There's going to be some ups and some downs. Better to have those downs in the minor leagues where he'll listen, he'll learn, he can make the adjustments, and then he gets a much better kind of trajectory going north. So I think for some organizations, you're almost pushing someone to possibly have some failure, but you hope it's limited, and then you hope that that player listens and understands it's not going to be easy, it's not going to be cake and roses all the way through the major league career, and maybe I am going to have to listen to some people that might know things a little bit more than I do.
I'm interested to watch Caro when it gets to the spring breakout game on the 15th against the Cubs. I really like the initiative by Major League Baseball, having organizations mm-hmm. offer their prospects to play other mm-hmm. prospects. I think it's a really cool showcase in the middle of spring training that we all get very excited for and then realize isn't the thing that we want, which is real baseball. And then, you know, just as watchers from home, and now we get to watch these kids play. Caro's going to be part of the White Sox roster for that. And you know, I think I want to feel like you guys got chances, you know, in the late 80s to play in some of those showcase games, of course, at points in spring training, right? It's not like there's a brand new idea.
No. There always were times that you could tell going, again, typically for us with the Dodgers, as I was coming up with, you got on the bus or you saw the list that morning at when you got into the clubhouse and you're realizing, wait a minute, here's the top three guys in AAA and here's the top three guys in AA. We're all going on this road trip where typically there might just be one or two, and then you realize how many of the guys you knew were going to be starting in LA or not. And it was almost like this buzz of, okay, when you got to, you know, Lakeland or you got to somewhere else and you looked at the other side and you realize these are all their top prospects that you've read about. Not all of them, but there's six prospects that are playing, like your six versus one, maybe two. Your juices started to flow. And it was one of those things you could tell both organizations had probably spoken and said, hey, let's give all of our starters, you know, the old all-stars a day off this day, and let's really have our youngsters go at it. And it was a great way to measure not just within the organization but outside the organization and see where did I match up with people that are comparable in another organization. Are we the Dodgers that are really that much better than the Tigers, or are their prospects every bit as good as we are? And holy cow, again, I got to listen to these coaches as I'm moving up through the minor leagues because there's guys that are better than me at the same level with other organizations.
Before we let you go, this is kind of the topic right now in White Sox camp. Two names, really one conversation. I'll leave this open-ended for you because I'd love to know where you sit at this point. What's the best way forward for both Michael Kopech and Garrett Crochet at this point, as you see it now, March 9, as we head closer and closer to opening day?
Well, for Michael, it's you're going to be a starter. This is maybe not your last chance, but maybe one of your last chances, and time for you to truly step up. We're going to give you the ball once every 5 days, and you know, this is on you, not on us anymore. And you understand, we understand where you are in your development, where you are in your career, and now it's time to shine. For Garrett, this is the fun one. As we've talked about, you know, offline, so to speak, if you want to make him a starter, to me, it doesn't make sense to put him in the bullpen in the major leagues, as much help as he could do for you there. Does it make sense to put him into the rotation in the major leagues? Of course not, because he doesn't have the innings built up. So is there some combination of putting him back in Charlotte and saying, you're going to go every 5 days Like, don't worry about anything in the bullpen. We know we're not winning the World Series this year. So winning two extra games is not as important as you developing and building up to 125 maybe innings this year in the minor leagues and becoming our number three guy next year and then for the next 5 years in the major leagues. But is there a combination that you could possibly start him in April because of so many off days? Or is there a possibility in April he could start in the major leagues and know where Pedro may have a bullpen day where there's going to be five guys throwing? Garrett is the guy that starts that. And he gets a couple innings, maybe three, through the month of April, where on the pitch count, he gets to continue to face major league pitchers and really kind of measure up with the high-pressure situations. And then once May rolls around and you shorten up the rosters, then you send him back to Charlotte. But I think it'll be interesting. My gut says, and if it was me, I would send him back to Charlotte, and I would say don't worry about anything but pitching once every 5 days and building up your arm strength so that next year and going forward, you're going to be in our rotation forever.
It'll be fascinating to see how it plays out. Michael, appreciate you as always. Looking forward to having you on all season long. White Sox and Padres coming up. It's ESPN 1000.